Okay, so the way I like to give like a Parsha Shmuz, at least in this forum, I think, is to give, like, to go through a Parsha very quickly, give like an overview of what happens, and then go through a bunch of different kind of ideas. Some will tie in, some won't necessarily, but I think that's good and that's fine, because, you know, some ideas you'll connect to and some ideas you'll connect to less. And also, if you space out for about 10 minutes, then you can still have a Torah for Shabbos. But either way, I think it gives a good kind of like overview about what's going on. So Parsha Shlach is the Parsha of the Meraglim. That you're familiar with? Nod your head. It's fine enough to take yourself off mute. Okay, fine. The Meraglim, obviously the spies, bad news, right? Moshe sends spies. Spies come back. Lashon Hara about Eretz Yisrael. Bnei Yisrael believe them. Again, quick basics. You guys are familiar. They cry. They get decreed 40 years in the desert. Good. This is familiar. Nod your heads. Good. Excellent. A bit of a plague. Okay, Kadosh Baruch Hu gets upset. Right, Moshe Davins, right? He says, okay, fine. Beseder, I'll kill everybody this generation, but everybody else will go into Eretz Yisrael. The Parsha has a couple of stuff about Korbanos, just because right afterwards, right, Hashem wanted to kind of reinforce the fact that, don't worry, you will make it into Eretz Yisrael, even though it seems pretty lousy right now. There's the mitzvah of challah. And then there's something called the Mekoshish Eitzim, the guy who is gathering sticks. I do love talking about that, but I'm actually not going to talk about that today. I think it's a fascinating vort, just to give you an insight. Basically, according to some, you know, part of the Gemara mentions that basically Bnei Yisrael were kind of saw 40 years in the desert. Oh my gosh, we're all done, forget it. And they were starting to give up. So it seems like from some sources that somebody went and was Mechal Shabbos on purpose so that he could get put to death on purpose to show Bnei Yisrael that, no, the mitzvahs are still legit and you should still take them seriously, even though we're all decreed we're going to die, whatever. That's a fascinating parsha. I'm not actually going to talk about that so much today. It's definitely cool if you want to check into it. And then the parsha ends off with tzitzis. So we'll do mostly Meraglim stuff, and then we'll end with a beautiful vort on tzitzis that I happen to adore. Okay, so anyway, so basically the Meraglim, you're familiar with the Meraglim. The Meraglim go into Eretz Yisrael and they come back and they say a lot. They say a lot of stuff, and it's a little bit tricky to pick up what the problem is with what they said. Because on the one hand, I'm just going to try and read a couple of psukim, a lot of things they said were very good, were very positive. Right? Some of the things they said were negative. Obviously, Bnei Yisrael took it in a bad way, but let's just read the psukim very quickly, just a couple of psukim. I'll try and paraphrase as best I can, and then we'll try to kind of to illustrate for you. So basically, they come back, and they say, Banu el haaretz asher shlachtanu, we went to the land. Vegam zavas chalav udvash hi vezeh periyah. And it's zavas chalav udvash, right? That's it's an amazing land. Efes, but ki azo ama yoshev baaretz, the nation is strong. Veharim b'tziros gedolos meod vegam yiladei hanak reinu sham. We saw all these nations that are strong and powerful. There's Amalek, and they name all the nations, right? And that's it. And that's the end of their statement. And then Kalev gets up and says, Alona leve, Rashnu Osal, let's go inherit it. Ki achol nuchala, because we can. And then the people say, well, I take it back when I said before, that it's hard to pin down what they said was wrong. That's not true. Right? There's a lot you could pin down over here. I take it back. But basically then the people say, no, we can't. Lo nuchala lo salam ki chazaku imenu, it's too strong for us. Okay, fine. So that's basically the statement, the back and forth. So there are a couple things I want to pick up on here. When I say it's hard to pin down, I didn't mean it's hard to pin down. It's just there are many aspects of what went wrong. But that word that I kind of pointed out when I was reading it, he says, Eretz Zavas Chalav Udvash, Hi Vezeh Periyah, right? It is a land of Zavas Chalav Udvash. Efes, but Ki Aza Am, but the nation is strong, and it's a very strong people, strong cities, giants, etc., etc. That word, but, is a crucial word. And very often, right, we also kind of use that word and almost don't pay attention to it, right? If someone would say to you, right, if someone would say, how is that shir, right? And someone would say, well, a couple of great things. Yeah, the rabbi is very fun to listen to and is a good topic, but 1, 2, 3, and 4. So is he, say, giving a good review or is he giving a bad review, right? Even though he said some positive things beforehand, he's not really focusing on the positives. Right. Anytime someone gives you a compliment, oh, that dress is so nice, but I feel like you should wear it to a wedding. So that's not a compliment. So that's not helpful. So when the true things that they said about Eretz Yisrael were true, but when you throw in that but, right, again, that ruins everything. And the Chora, that was their perspective. I mean, they saw amazing things, right? But they were focused on the negative, right? We talked about a little bit last week by the misodinim, right? By the complainers, right? That they complained about the man. They said things like, we remember the fish that we ate in Mitzrayim for free. For free, that's very selective memory, right? You're remembering very selective things about the things you had in Mitzrayim. They talk about the watermelons in Mitzrayim. The watermelons in Mitzrayim. 210 years of slavery, and all you remember are the watermelons. Like, that is very selective memory. When a person is focused on the negative, when you're looking for something to complain about, when you're looking to be negative, you can find anything. Right? So lesson number one you can take, again, from last week and from this week as well, is that a person sees what they want to see, and if they want to be negative, they're going to be negative. And they want to be positive, they want to be positive. And the decision really almost comes beforehand, right? We see a lot of Chazal, a lot of the speeches, a lot of the Ritori, talk about the Meraglim, is that they were intending to give a bad result, right? That's why Moshe davened for Yoshua, right? They were intending to give a bad speech about Eretz Yisrael. They went in thinking, all right, how can we mess this up? Right, we'll touch on it in a second, that the Medrash says they had Ruach HaKodesh, that they weren't going to be able to conquer the cities and stuff. Fine. But they went in deciding to be negative. Right, my wife often tells me, and it's a lot of truth behind this, that if ever I'm in a bad mood, you just smile like that emoji. You know the emoji that just has like, you know that one that has no actual smile, it's just like, I don't even know how to describe it, like an oval. But just force yourself to do that, because when you smile, even if you hate it, so all of a sudden you're smiling, right? And exactly, that emoji, fabulous. So, and it happens to be one of my personal favorites. And even though I'm frustrated on the inside, but when you force yourself to smile, it just reminds yourself, yeah, I gotta make the best out of the situation, right? Someone asked me, I remember one of the girls asked me, I'm not gonna, you know, say who it was, it's not Lashon Hara, but it's not relevant. They're nervous about their summer plans. And they're nervous about like, oh, I'm gonna be in a place, I'm not sure about this or whatever. So I kind of just said to them, I'm like, listen, you just have to decide to make it good and then it'll be good. Like, when you decide, right, what you want out of a certain situation, so that's what comes out of it. Now, Lachora seemed to be what the Meraglim kind of started with. Okay, that's number one, issue number one with the Meraglim. Number two, issue number two with the Meraglim is something that Piazetzna Rebbe points out. Fascinating insight of the Piazetzna Rebbe. Again, the Piazetzna Rebbe wrote a sefer called the Eish Kodesh, Chovas HaTalmidim, was in the Warsaw Ghetto, sharing Torah and spreading, keeping hope alive for the Jews, was murdered, obviously, in the Holocaust. And the Baruch Hashem, his writings came out to us. So he basically, his Eish Kodesh is basically a list of his, if you can imagine, a bunch of speeches in shul during the Holocaust, right, in the Warsaw Ghetto, that's the Eish Kodesh. That's his sefer. So it's mind-blowing when you just realize the context. So he has an unbelievable shot with the Meraglim. He says, I kind of read it over for you before, right? What the Meraglim said, like the bad stuff about Eretz Yisrael, right? That not Eretz Yisrael, but the people are so strong. I'm just paraphrasing. The cities are so high. There are giants. There's Amalek. There's all these strong nations, etc. What does Kalev say? Kalev says, let's go. We can do it. We can do it. And Rashi says something fascinating. He says, "What was alo nala? What did Kalev mean?" And I'm just paraphrasing the Hebrew. Even if you would tell me, even if Hashem would tell us, let's go make ladders and go up to the sky, even if that's what we had to do, we would be matzliach. Matzliach as bechol devarav. We would figure it out. Says the Piazetzna Rebbe, I don't understand. The Meraglim are coming with all of these technical, legitimate claims. It's hard to capture a city that has giants and huge walls and a strong army. Right? They're coming with all these tachlis, normal, natural pointers. They're not wrong, right? And Kalev is like, well, yeah, but if we could just build ladders to the sky, so then, you know, we could do that also. What in the world is that? Like, what kind of answer is that? So, says Piazetzna Rebbe, that's exactly the point. That sometimes, Kosh Baruch Hu makes it as if all of the natural responses and resources and avenues of success are unavailable. And at that point, it's not it's not at that point. It's better just to look to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's better just to look instead of looking for even more answers. Some point, Hashem just wants you to daven. Hashem just wants you to have emunah and be talking that things will work out. That yes, in a chinami, and this is what he points out. He says, he doesn't point this out, but as Fasemis points out, I'll get to that in a second. But basically, whenever you're in a situation where natural, you know, if it's not working out, so you come back shana bet and you can't think of anything or anything that will help. So all it is HaKadosh Baruch Hu just wants you to daven, meaning he's making it more difficult for you because he wants you to realize that really everything that's natural is from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and that's the whole point. That the whole logic, the whole exercise, is so that we can have. To strengthen our emunah and get into focus. Says the Sfas Emes, I saw it in Ramelech Biderman, and he says the Sfas Emes is unbelievable. It said the Medrash, like I said before, the Medrash says the Meraglim saw in Ruach HaKodesh that the Bnei Yisrael did not have enough strength to conquer Eretz Yisrael. So therefore they decided, well, we might as well kind of, you know, warn them off and make sure that let's not go get it. Says the Sfas Emes, no, that was the point. I mean, Hashem wanted them not to have enough natural physical ability to conquer Eretz Yisrael, and that if they should trust in Hashem, that they should use the HaKadosh Baruch Hu's promises as their point for emunah and bitachon. That was how they were supposed to conquer Eretz Yisrael. And says Rav Melech that sometimes HaKadosh Baruch Hu does that in our lives, and that sometimes Hashem does that to us. And sometimes we have to realize that when we're going through difficult times, what we perceive as difficult, and you can't figure out, I don't know how I'm going to get into college, I don't know how I'm going to pass this test, I don't know how I'm going to get this job, etc. When all the natural avenues are exhausted to us, sometimes that's because Hashem wants us to daven, Hashem wants us to turn to Him. So that's also tremendous, tremendous Musar. Musar number three from the Meraglim. What happened? What Bnei Yisrael's response from the Meraglim was, Vayivku ham b'leilahu, a pretty well-known Maimar Chazal, that Bnei Yisrael cried that they weren't going to be able to conquer it. To conquer Eretz Yisrael, and the Gemara in Tanya says, Daf Chav Tes, that since they cried what's called the Bechi Shel Chinam, they cried a chinam, literally in modern Hebrew is free, but it means they cried unnecessarily. So I'll show you, says the Kodesh Baruch Hu, I'll show you what it means to cry. Right? I'll show you what it means to cry for generations. And the question that everybody asks is like, dude, for real, like for all generations, like they got this, fine, I got it. They got depressed, they got misled by the Meraglim, Lashon Hara, Eretz Yisrael, fine, I get it. Terrible, okay. Now, for the next 3,000 years or 2,000 years, since the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, now we're going to have a day to cry every single year because they blew it in the desert? I mean, listen. I mean, proportion. Come on, let's go. This is very disproportionate. What's going on over here? So it says the Ruzhiner Rebbe. The Rebbe from Ruzhin. That's right. The Rebbe that we have a street named after him. Somebody who lived on Ruzhin. So that's right. It says the Ruzhiner Rebbe, a story about a wealthy man. Now, I don't know if the story is real, is true, but it definitely illustrates the point that we're gonna try to make. It's a story about a guy who was wealthy and did not have a keres hatov. He was always complaining, did not appreciate the wealth that he was given. So, as the story goes, right, HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, "Okay, you think you're complaining about your situation? Fine, I'll make it a little worse. You think this is what's you should complain about this? I'll give you something to complain about." So, sure enough, he lost his money and had to go begging on the streets, and he was complaining. He's complaining. Hashem said, fine, you think this is something you have to complain about? You think that's bad? I'll give you something to complain about. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave him tzaras. So he couldn't even go beg because he was outside the city. Right? If you have tzaras, you have leprosy, you're not allowed to, it's not really leprosy, whatever, but you have to be outside of the city. So he couldn't even go beg for food. Right? So he complained. HaKadosh Baruch Hu made him a gimp. His back started hurting. He got another illness. He couldn't even swallow his food. And at that point, right, he had an illness that a lot of the beggars or a lot of the people around him were not making it. There was a plague or whatever it was, and a lot of people around him were dying. And at that point, he was just happy to be alive. And he just said, you know what, I can't eat so well, I can't walk, but you know what, all these people around me are not going to make it. I'm not making it from this disease. At this point, you know what, at least I'm happy I'm alive. HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, oh, good, you're happy about this? I'll give you something else to be happy about. And then he cured him from the backaches and the food swallowing. At least he could swallow food now. And said, you know what, Baruch Hashem, I can swallow food, and it looks like I'm going to make it through this illness. Hashem said, oh, listen, you know what? It looks like you think that's HaKadosh Baruch Hu? I'll give you something else to have HaKadosh Baruch Hu for. So he started giving him, right, he healed him from his tzaras. He gave him a little bit of money. So he thanked Hashem again. Right? And Hashem said, you know what? Okay, so you think that's good? I'll give you something that'll make you really thank me. So, and he gave him more money to the point where he came back to where he was before. He had his original riches, and at this point, he was thanking Kosh Baruch Hu. Says the Ruzhin Rebbe in Sefer Tov Lahodos, that's what the Gemara means. When the Gemara says that Kosh Baruch Hu, that we cried, and therefore Hashem said, you know what? You think that's crying? I'll give you something to cry about. Because it's not a vengeful act. It's simply how Kosh Baruch Hu relates to us in this world. Right? We hear the concept of Mida Keneged Mida, that Hashem gives us our Mida. Right? The Gemara Makos talks about by Bilam, we'll talk about it in a couple of weeks. But Derech Shalom wrote to Leilich Molichonoso, the path a person wants to go down, that's where Hashem takes you. Right? You want to go higher and higher in Yiddishkeit, Hashem will give you Sata Dishmaya. If you want to go lower, unfortunately Hashem will also give you Sata Dishmaya. Right, the Nefesh HaChaim, Rav Chaim Volozhiner writes in Nefesh HaChaim that, again, not that I really understand this so much, but the things that we manifest down in this world, right, impact the worlds above us, and they come in turn, then impact us down in this world. It's like a chain reaction almost, like a rope that goes up through all the upper worlds. And the mitzvos and the attitudes that we have down here send shockwaves up towards Shemayim, and then they come back down, they reflect back down on us. That's what the concept of mitzvah gereres mitzvah. When we do a mitzvah, we cause ourselves to have more holiness, and it leads to another mitzvah. Basically, our attitudes, as we pointed out before, our attitudes determine, right, what happens to us. Right? What we want to see is what Akash Baruch Hu gives us, or the path that we want to go down. So if you want to see the world in a certain way, right, that maybe is more negative than you should, so just be careful what you wish for. You might be very surprised about what Akash Baruch Hu has got in store for you. Right? Our goal, our job is to have a Karas HaTov for everything. Right? Not to just to have bitachon and emunah and kind of focus and realize that Akash Baruch Hu is the source for everything. And what our attitude has in this world, that Akash Baruch Hu will give it back to us. Right? That's what we're talking about over here. Okay. Fine. One more about the Meraglim, and then we'll do two other little points over here. Okay. The Medjur says, one of the things that the Meraglim said, let's just see if I can find it over here. It's at the end of the Perek. Pazik says, right, they had the Lashon Hara about the land that we went to, Eretz Ochel Yoshveh, he eats its inhabitants, right, because they saw a lot of people dying, and Kosh Baruch Hu did that for them on purpose, said the giants would be busy with the funerals, etc. Anyway, Vishamra Inuas and Nephilim, we saw the giants, and that fascinating line that again you may have heard of, Vanihibe Ninu Kachagavim, Vechin Hainu Benehem. Right? We were like grasshoppers in their eyes, and so too we were, well, I guess the other way around. We were like grasshoppers in our eyes, and so too we were grasshoppers in their eyes. Now, what in the world is going on over here? The Gemara does say, and we'll talk to this in a second, that they heard the giants saying, wow, check it out, there are ants in the fields. So when they say that they thought that we were grasshoppers, it's perhaps based on that. But the Medrash says something unbelievable, that Bnei Yisrael, that Kosh Baruch Hu could not forgive them, right? He could have forgiven them, right, for the fact that they saw what was the problem over here? Meaning that they saw themselves in other people's eyes. Right? They thought what the giants were thinking about them. And Hashem says, how do you know this? Right? How do you know that they think that you are grasshoppers? Meaning, how do you know that Akash Baruch Hu didn't make them seem like malachim? Meaning, how a person sees himself, right, the way we shape our own view of ourselves in the world, that's how we think other people see us. According to our own worldview, there's nobody who's a big Baal Gaiva, right? A person, let's take for an extreme example, someone who is tremendously arrogant and think that they are the greatest gift to mankind. That guy does not think that everybody else thinks that he's an idiot. Right? That guy assumes that everybody looks at him the same way. Right? And so too, someone who is all the way down, right, kind of suffering, kind of like someone who views themselves very low, right, thinks that everybody else thinks that he's also very low, or she's also very low, or she's not worth anything. So again, the Gemara Sota says that they heard them saying, oh look, there are ants in the vineyard. It says the Sfas Emes, unbelievable, right? Kefisha Adam Choshev Hu Shomea. According to what a person thinks, that's what he hears. Meaning, it's not that they heard the giant saying, oh look, there are bugs in the vineyard, And then they assumed, oh, that's what they must be thinking of themselves. It's they thought of themselves as little bugs, and that's what they heard. Meaning, so this, again, just to think about it from a logical perspective, right? You're a bug, you're down in the vineyard, or you're a normal-sized human, and there are giants. You hear the giants saying, oh, look, there are bugs in the vineyard. How do you know they're talking about you? The giants are, let's say, 20 feet tall. Their viewpoint, they're looking out over a much bigger land space or landmass than you're occupying. You're a little guy, you're normal human size, and they're 20 feet tall, so or 30 feet tall, whatever it is. So you're in a little area of space. He's looking out over a huge landmass. Oh, look, there are ants in the vineyard. How do you know he's talking about your Dalai? You don't know he's talking about your Dalai. Just if that's how you view yourself, that's what you hear. That your worldview is shaped by how you carry yourself and how you feel. And there's an amazing story that Amelich Biederman tells over to explain this idea. He says there was a guy once, there was a coal guy, who was very timid. And no one ever asked him shilas in the Beis Medrash about, you know, what the sugya, what they were learning. No one ever asked him on the street for directions. Nobody in his house ever asked, like, you know, how's everything? Would you, how was your day, etc. No one ever paid any attention to him whatsoever. So after a long time, he decided, you know what, maybe I got to get people, somebody to pay attention to me. He decided, you know, he's feeling very lonely. He decided to go buy a new hat. He saw a sign for a new hat on sale or whatever. So you know what? I'm going to take this old hat that I've been wearing since my bar mitzvah. I'm going to go buy a new hat. Fine. Goes to the store, buys a new hat, spends a good amount of money, looks at it in the mirror, decides he's going to be a new man. He says, I'm going to be such a new man, I'm going to leave the old hat here. I'm not even going to take it with me. Takes a new hat, walks out, right, feeling good about himself. And all of a sudden, you know, within a day or two, people are asking him shilas in the Beis Medrash. Right, there's a kid asking him to help him cross the street. He comes home and the family asks, how was your day? What's going on? Do you need something? Can I help you with this? Can you help me with that? And so people notice this change in attitude and they ask him, what's the deal? So being still a little timid, he just like points points like this with his finger up at Shammai. Day or two, he doesn't explain. After a day or two, people ask him again, like, what's the deal? What's the new attitude? How's it going? So instead of finally, you know, they asked him, "What are you pointing at Hashem or something? Did some nace happen to you that all of a sudden you're a changed man?" So a little embarrassed, he says, "No, I'm really just pointing to my hat. You know, I got a new hat, and I feel like a new man." And everybody looks around, and finally someone says to him, "I hate to break it to you, bro, but that's the same hat you've always been wearing." And what turned out is that he didn't leave the old hat in the store; he left the new hat in the store. And he took the old hat with him, and he was still wearing the same hat, except he was carrying himself differently. And that's what the Rav Melech says, that the way we carry ourselves is how people will relate to us. That the attitude that we have, that we make it, like I said before, like if you're sad, smile like that emoji, just make your own reality. Right? Just if you make your own reality and you decide that you're going to carry yourself in a way that will make things better, so then things will happen to you that will be better. Okay, that's a few words about the Meraglim. Two more Vortlach that I very much enjoy about this parsha. A fascinating, fascinating few psukim. After Hashem says that Bnei Yisrael, okay, you guys are toast, and we're done, and you're getting stuck in the Midbar, there's a bunch of people who get up the next morning. Fascinating response. Just trying to find it over here. Perik Yudal Pasuk Mem, if you're following along on the Chumash. Yeah. Okay, here it is. Basically, everybody cries. Right? Moshe tells them, they mourn. Vayzablu ha'am me'od. Everybody's in mourning. Vayashkimu baboker vayalu el rosh ha'har le'mor. People get up early. They get up to the top of the mountain. And they say, Hinenu ve'alinu el makom ha'shar amar Hashem kichatanu. You know what? We blew it. We're here. We're getting up. We're here at the top of the mountain. We're going up to Eretz Yisrael. We sinned, we messed up, we're going up there. Right, this is what is called the Ma'apilim. And Moshe says to them, there's nothing doing. I mean, it's done. We're finished. Right, there's no, Kadosh Baruch Hu doesn't want you to go up there. Don't go up. Hashem is not with you. You're not going to be survived. You're not going to survive. The Amalekim, the Canaanim are going to kill you guys. You guys have sinned. You got to accept your punishment and suck it up. And they decided, no. Vayapilu lo sa rosh ha'har, they decided to go up anyway. Right? Nobody follows them. And unfortunately, the Amalekim and the Canaanim come down and they kill them and they kill the Amalekim. And obviously, that is the end of that. Now, what Chazal pointed out in several places, not only here, but if it's here, I'm going to point it out again. is that it's fascinating. The exact same action one day earlier would have been a tremendous mitzvah. Right? One day earlier, Bnei Yisrael is ready to roll, go into Eretz Yisrael. Fabulous. Everybody goes up the mountain, starts fighting the wars, let's go defeat them. Wonderful. The exact same action, 24 hours, 48 hours, however many hours later, was a disaster and got them all killed. And what is the only difference between those two actions? Even though they were exactly the same physical action, the single difference was the Tzivui Hashem. Right? What HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted from them in that moment. Right? Sometimes in life, the exact same action can be either good or bad, depending on the circumstance. And what Chazal bring out, and again, I've said this during the year, but I'll just finish the board. But I've said this during the year, basically, actions themselves are neither positive nor negative. It just depends on the circumstance. It just depends on context. Right? Very often, it can be a tremendous mitzvah to do, to give someone $1,000. Tremendous mitzvah. But if that is going to prohibit you from not being able to, afford an apartment, food, etc. So Chazal say that's inappropriate. Right? A person is not supposed to give more than 20% of their money to tzedakah, right, if they can't afford it. 20% is very high, I'm saying 10%, whatever it is. Person giving that much money, but they themselves can't live, that's not a mitzvah tzedakah. Right? There are a lot of words like this all over the Chumash. For example, what's the difference between Maimon Har Sinai and the Egel HaZav, right? Both and the Mishkan and Egel HaZav, both of them are using some sort of gold, right, to worship HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Pashtus, obviously, this is cutting it very simply, but the Egel HaZav was gold, the Aron was gold. What is the difference between the two? Obviously, this is very simple. Is Hashem commanded Bnei Yisrael to build the Aron, and He didn't command Bnei Yisrael to build the Egel, right? That's not as good an example as this one, but this is literally cut and dry. So basically, things in that we do always have to be discussed in context. It always depends on the circumstance. What does the halacha say about this? What does the Torah say about this? Right? We might think that we're being magnanimous and very nice, but really the Torah might demand a totally different set of circumstances. That's why it's important to always have a rav and always be familiar with halacha and stuff like that. Obviously, ask your friends. And make sure that you get a good hadracha, because sometimes when we take these life aspects into our own hands, sometimes that can get a little muddy. Okay, last vort, and I enjoy this vort tremendously as well. I heard this vort from Rav Chagai Ravid, who was a Rav Mevasar, now he teaches, I think, at Leva Torah, that the pasuk says by Titus, not so relevant to you guys, but the idea is relevant, and it's a beautiful vort, and we'll leave off with this, is the pasuk says that tzitzis reminds us of all the mitzvos. You guys familiar with that? Does that ring a bell at all? That tzitzis reminds us of the mitzvos. So how does tzitzis, a bunch of strings, remind us of the mitzvos? So Rashi is probably most famous, is that you do a gematria, that you take tzad yud tuf, and you hash out that math, and I'll do it quickly for you. It gets you the 600, and the strings are 8, and the knots are 5, and that gets you to the magic number of 613. Just as an aside, how do you know there's 613 mitzvos? Gemara mentions it a couple places, Makos, whatever. There's a whole discussion as to what the 613 mitzvos are. Right? That's been debated for centuries. But okay, 613. That's how the tzitzis reminds us of the mitzvos. Now the Ramban and others have a couple problems with this. First of all, the 8 strings and 5 knots is not always so clear. You don't necessarily need 8 strings and 5 knots. And even better, which I like, is that the Ramban says, if you look at the word in the Torah, the word tzitzis is never spelled with 2 yuds. It's always spelled tzadi yud, tzadi tuf. So you're missing 10. So people say, okay, Saras Adibros. Okay, once you're adding in Saras Adibros, come on, now you're just fudging it. Tosus has a better answer. He said, whatever, you take the Lamed and Litzitzis at the end. Okay, you could divide it by 3. It says the word Tzitzis 3 times. Each one gets an extra 10. Okay, you can fudge the numbers. Says Ramban, how does Tzitzis remind you of the mitzvos? It reminds you via the Tchelis. The Tchelis, as you know, was a part of the Tzitzis. Some people do nowadays, some people don't. That's a whole discussion in and of itself. But basically, the tchelis was a blue string running through the tzitzis, different menhagim, how it looks. Either way, that reminds us of the sea, and that reminds us of the sky, and that reminds us of the Kisei HaKavod. Right? The blue color, the Tcheles, reminds us of the sea, reminds us of the sky, reminds us of the Kisei HaKavod. Kisei HaKavod is made out of sapphire, the Pasuk says, in Mishpatim, and Yechezkel, and Meister Merkava, etc. So that reminds us of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Now, there are a lot of things you can ask about that vort, but Rav Chagai said something very sharp. He says, what do you need the sea for? The sky is blue. When the sky is blue, you want to say it's the upper waters reflecting the sky. You want to say it's the Kisei HaKavod. However you get the blue color of the sky, whatever it is. What do you need the sea for? Just say it. Since it reminds you of the sky, it reminds you of the Kisei HaKavod. What do you need the sea? What do you need the water for? The ocean is nice, but like, what does that have to do with anything? Okay, you want to say it's Mayim Chayim, and the Torah is compared to water. Right? You remember that kind of Gemara with Rabbi Akiva and the Roman. The Roman says, why don't you just stop keeping Torah? Rabbi Akiva says, because I'm like a fish in the sea. If a fox would say to the fish, come live up on land, it doesn't work. I need the water to live. So too, I need the Torah to live. Okay, fine. But Rav Chagai says, I'll tell you even better. He says, when does the sea look blue? Only if it's not murky. Only if it's not muddy. Only if it's clear. Only if it's clear. Says Rav Chagai, when does Torah work? When does a Torah lifestyle work? When there's nothing muddying the waters. When there's no other noise. When there's nothing clouding, right, from other, let's say, disciplines. When a person has a singular life goal, a singular life focus, to live a life of Torah mitzvos, to live a life of frumkeit, so that's when it reminds you of the sky and reminds you of the Kisei HaKavod. Whenever things are muddy and dirty and messed up and kind of mixed with other, maybe other types of hashkafa or other things that are kind of making static noise, then the water doesn't remind you at all of the sky. The water then gets all murky and gray and dark, and things maybe get a little confusing, a little messed up. That's a crucial, crucial thing to remember. Certainly when you guys are in America during the summer with a lot of free time, and all the time, but certainly in the summer when you guys have just gone back, right, and you're starting to kind of find your way, it's crucial to remember that it doesn't work when you have Torah and other things, right? Like that you have, let's say, you learn Torah, but you also have a priority. This is a boy thing, so you also watch sports. And you also keep Shabbos, but you also like to read, when you have all these other things, I like to do, I'm struggling for examples because I'm looking at the timer at the top of the Zoom and it's ending in 3 minutes. But whenever you have all these other priorities competing with Torah, and Torah is not the singular life view and the singular goal, and meaning whenever you have Torah and also work and also things you like to do to relax, and none of those mesh and they all clash, so then you have a trouble. But when everything is viewed through the lens of Torah, so then everything works out. Right? Then everything is clear. Then you're able to have a strong anchor. You're able to live a life of Torah mitzvos. Right? When you're letting things compete with each other, so if you feel like doing something else, so then Torah values are maybe not necessarily so crucial to you. But when Torah is the way you live your life, everything else fits into that. The way you take vacation, the things you watch on Netflix, the way you spend your chill time, everything fits into that Torah worldview, and that's when things are what's called miskayim. That's when things kind of stay with you. All right, so we'll finish with that, and I hope everybody has an amazing Shabbos. And tomorrow, I hope you say that over next year by Parshas Shlach. But I very much enjoy hanging out with you guys. I will just mention quickly that